back-to-back for Zion Williamson. First time he's had a chance to do that so far in his NBA career.
They have a whole fan base that just wants to see some sign of progress. That 8th seed is huge.
It's not worth it to me right now.
Hi, Golgan Wingo with you, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. So what do we make of what we saw last night in the first ever meeting between Luka Doncic and Zion Williamson, and what should be the expectations going forward? For more on that and the comparison that Junior made, that Doncic is a less athletic LeBron. A
lot less.
It's an interesting one. Let's bring in someone who might have an opinion on that, someone who played with LeBron James and is just an all-around good guy, our NBA analyst, Richard Jefferson. Good morning.
You guys are so nice.
We are. We try to be. Yeah, we butter you up and then we bang, we bring you down. Junior brought up the idea that Doncic is a less athletic LeBron James. Your thoughts as someone who has played with LeBron James on that comparison?
I think, you know, there's a lot of – every player is unique. Obviously, everybody knows that. But I think he's very close to James Harden, too. Not the 35-point-a-night James Harden, but when James Harden was racking up triple-doubles and triple-doubles, but the ability to score with ease, I think – I think he's closer to that in the way he's able to just score so easily, get other people involved. I think he's closer to a James Harden type than he is LeBron, because athletically, that's so much of LeBron's game. Where I think James Harden, he had that famous, I wish I was 7 foot and I could just go dunk. So I think their skill level between him and Luka is probably a little bit more similar.
So in the win last night over New Orleans, he and Porzingis go for over 30, and it's the first time they've done that as a pair. This team, they're the 7th slot right now. They can move up some. They probably won't move back. They have a good lead on the 8th slot in Memphis. What do you see in this team? Not so much this year. They're not going to compete for it. But what they need to do to be that team that possibly could get the upper echelon of the Western Conference?
Well, I think we really saw it from Porzingis, right? Like, you want more help from these guys. But if Luka's going to do these numbers and then Porzingis can get back to where he was one of the top 25 players in the league, where he is a great defensive player, I think, to me, that's how they're going to be able to get there. And then you build around those two. You know, look, he missed an entire year of basketball, Porzingis. And so it's going to take him time to get back to being the player that he's used to. Sometimes it can take a full season, right? We look at Gordon Hayward. We look at Paul George. It took those guys a couple of years to get back to who they can be. But I think they have two great pieces. I think that's what it is. Porzingis becoming a top 25 player, Luka being a top 10 player in this league, and then you build around him. That's pretty much all you need.
On the other side of this, Zion Williamson, we know that this is billed as the first meeting between him and Luka. So far, the report card for Zion through the smaller portion of the season that he's played, better, worse, or about what you've expected?
I would say, we had high expectations for him, but we weren't sure how he's going to handle some things. So I would say it's probably a little bit better than expected. When we see how dominant he can be on the scoring end and then the efficiency in which he does it against bigger players, against smaller players, his ability to figure it out, he just goes straight. If he's guarded by a bigger player, goes straight to their chest. Guarded by a smaller player, he just jumps and just, you know, continues to elevate and elevate over them. So he has a very, very good feel for the game. I think he fits in well with his teammates immediately, which is something that is impressive for a rookie. And really, there's just an energy about the organization every time he steps on the floor.
Absolutely. And Richard Jefferson with us. A question in two parts. First and foremost, this was the first time he'd played back-to-back games, and here was head coach Alvin Gentry when asked about whether or not he was okay in playing back-to-back games.
I think he's fine. We worry about him too freaking much, okay? He's fine. He's 19 years old. He'll be fine.
I think we're done with that part of the discussion, right? Doesn't that sort of put the nail in the coffin there?
Yeah. I think, look, at the end of the day, we're going to need him to play basketball. You know, the Pelicans are, right? What are your goals? When you get the number one pick, your goal should be to develop this player, to build around him, and ultimately win a championship, right? Like, that's what number one picks are supposed to be. They're supposed to be the hub of your team. They're supposed to be that opportunity, very similar to Anthony Davis, to build around a great player, and they have a great team. But you need him on the court. You need him to play 70 to 75 games a year at least. And so this is a part of it. He's had a couple of injuries. They're very cautious with him. But the progression of him playing back-to-backs, that means he will play more back-to-backs as long as he stays healthy. Then, you know, he doesn't want to talk about it. You can't keep coddling all of these kids. Anytime I hear someone say they should shorten the NBA season, it's like, why? guys have done it for 60 years. Then they didn't have the plane flights. They didn't have the medicine. They didn't have the game readies and all the things necessary. If you shorten the season to 60 games, guys are going to start playing 50. You shorten it to 50 games, guys are going to start playing 40. Keep the number where it is and allow guys, you know, that need some rest to get some rest.
All right, speaking of numbers, as Richard is with us, what does it say to you that in 122 games, Luka Doncic has broken the record it took Jason Kidd 500 games to get to? Most triple-doubles in a Maverick uniform. That's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous because Jason Kidd, obviously, in playing with him and you know, Jason Kidd used to miss triple doubles by scoring, which was hilarious. And I don't know, look, the game is different, and that's not to take anything away from Luka, but we see triple doubles now as just kind of, you know, that's what players do. LeBron James, the first player to have a triple double versus every team, followed up by all of a sudden Russell Westbrook's able to do that. You look at the amount of triple doubles that Luka's able to get on a given night because he does have just a well-balanced game. So triple doubles, I think, are more prevalent in today's game, where like Jason Kidd, the Larry Birds and Magic Johnson, they were kind of revolutionaries with that. But now guys just look at that as like something that they want to try and go get.
So a follow-up on that, in the top 10 all-time triple-doubles, we have four active players. Russell Westbrook at 2, LeBron at 5, Harden at 8, and Jokic at 10. So you say it's more prevalent today. Is it less meaningful today than it was because we're seeing it more?
Well, anytime you start to see something more and more and more and it just becomes a consistent part of the game, I'm not saying it's more meaningful, but I also know this, and we had an opportunity to have Oscar Robertson on The Jump, and I go, you know, hey, if you would have known triple-doubles was a thing, because guys do chase after it. I don't think at the sake of the game, but guys do chase after it. They look at it as a benchmark, no different than getting to 10 points or to getting 20 points. There's guys that use these things as benchmarks for how well they played. And he goes, it wouldn't have changed my game. Oscar Robertson said, you know, that was just what I did. That's just how we did it. He goes, you know, the way he played and trying to impact the game on all levels. So I think when you look at now, knowing that guys kind of go after it as a benchmark, not necessarily chasing stats, but as a benchmark for how impactful they are, I think the triple-double has definitely, I don't want to say we've been desensitized, but it's not as impactful as it was, I want to say, like 25 years ago.
All right, Richard, I got to ask. This has been weighing on me for like a day.
Okay, just bring it,
I saw the clip, and I need to know if you were joking or not. Do you actually think Tim Duncan got carried most of his career?
I don't understand where I was not direct with my answer. I don't like repeating myself. I have small children, so you know, I also have a junior. He never doesn't listen to me either. So
sounds like a good dude.
No, he's a great kid. But no, honestly, like I just don't feel like people should, you know, focus too much on my tone and just listen to every word that I said.
So you agree that you honestly believe that Tim Duncan was carried during his career by the rest of that team? All right, that wasn't a joke. I just wanted to make sure.
Just okay. Let me, because you know, sometimes like we have to appease the lower forms of life of life.
Please,
on this planet.
I need appeasement right now.
I have way too much respect for you to believe that. And now you can. It's okay for you to bring it up and to hash it up again. But I refuse to believe in all of the sport knowledge that has been instilled in that head of yours that you believe that I was being 100% serious.
All right. Yeah, no, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure.
So you were
sure.
Asking for a friend.
I was asking for a friend. You know
okay,
what?
That's fair.
Someone off air wanted
that's
me to
fair.
Put it out there. I knew you were better than
if
that.
If you want
Richard,
to throw him under
so.
The bus, that's fine.
No,
Richard,
you know what? That's not the kind of guy I am. That's
I told him
I
not
to
do
it.
I said you didn't mean it. I told him not to do it, but these damn millennials.
I was just worried.
They don't listen.
No,
these millennials, they don't listen. They don't care. They don't listen.
Boom. Yeah.
It's sad.
I need
it's
a rest
sad.
Day, man. This
you
is
do.
Unreal.
That's what I'm saying. Like, honestly, load management day. I get it. You go take it.
Richard, I don't know if you heard. I climbed Kilimanjaro like 2 days ago. I'm exhausted still.
Honestly, you know what? It's tough. I did not hear. I don't have reception in Malibu. So it's just like, dude, I get it. You know.
Oh, the best there is. Richard, thank you for clearing
Thanks,
that up for some
it.
Of the lower life forms
no
that
problem.
May not have understood.
No
I think we're going to end on the high note.
Yeah, I think
yeah. Great certainty.
Yeah.
Richard, you're the best.
Thank
Never
you
change.
Guys,
appreciate it.
We'll see you.
Thanks.
So you feel better now?
But you weren't sure when you first heard him.
I wasn't sure,
so that
man.
Means it he was... did it really well then.
Yeah, oh, listen, yeah, he yeah, yeah. played it perfectly in all yeah. that one. That's,
yeah.
God.
I can't believe you fell for that.
I was just concerned, man.
You know, every once in a while. Kilimanjaro as your excuse.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I was instructed. Stu Gotz and the Dan Levitard show, as good as it gets when it comes to making excuses for your behavior, said, I got a good 6 months of being able to use that. And he's right. He's right. It's one of the seven summits. It's absolutely worth 6 months of excuses for when I mess things up.
Yeah, I'm with you. So
I think if you didn't understand, maybe you didn't hear the entire thing, I think it was
important, that's why I asked, because the clip was presented without larger context, maybe. You know, I saw some of our colleagues almost walk off set because of what was going on there. So
that means he did it well.
Well, and you know what? Like, that's also Richard Jefferson. Like, I heard him on a broadcast the other night. Like, he likes to speak and deal in deep sarcasm. This is the world that he lives in. And so I wanted to clarify for some people out there, for some people that might think this is too hot takey. I wanted to make sure that people understood Richard Jefferson, just a big kidder.
There you go. Now, I wonder,
just goofing.
Going back to what we were talking about, we keep talking about the young greats in this league, right?
Yeah.
Luka and Ja Morant and Zion, I'll stick with those. I think the next thing for all of them is going to be when are their teams going to become relevant, right? I mean, because you're sitting there with Zion now. Again, he missed a lot of the season. It doesn't look like they're going to make the playoffs. They're five back from Memphis with three other teams in front of them as well. Now, Ja Morant is there in the eighth seed with Memphis, and you have Luka on the seventh seed right now. The other guy we bring up is Jason Tatum. They're at Boston. They're at the three seed, and they're looking really good right now. But that's the next thing we want, right?
Yeah.
These young, great players, when are they going to, you know, overtake the top teams?
Right, and you alluded to it earlier that this was an opportunity that the Pelicans had, to try and make up ground. Our own Brian Windhorst, who we all want to see the Pelicans make the playoffs, because we'd like to see Zion in his first postseason run. We're excited by everything he does. But here was Brian Windhorst basically saying, if the Pelicans were going to make the playoffs, they probably blew their opportunity over this little stretch of games here.
For people who want to see Zion on the playoffs, and I'm one of them, it's been a really bad 4 days. Had three losses in 4 days here. The loss last night to the Timberwolves at home was just devastating. I'm not going to go crazy about a loss in March, but they have no wiggle room here. And really the big thing is they've blown an opportunity. The Grizzlies come out of the break, and they have a couple of injuries, including to Jaren Jackson. They lose five in a row. Yet here the Pelicans are, and they've gained no ground. You just mentioned that the Blazers are 2-4 without Lillard. They've gained no ground on them. And they have a four-game road trip next week. Now, the one thing I will say, they have two games left with the Grizzlies, two games left with the Kings, and two games left with the Spurs. So they do kind of control their own destiny. That said, those teams control their destiny against the Pelicans. It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to do it. It's not over, but it's bleak.
No, it's very bleak. And they don't control their own destiny, right? I mean, they're five out of Memphis, and as I said, three other teams ahead of them. So there's other teams that control more of that. They're home to Miami tomorrow, and then they do a four-game road swing to Minnesota, Sacramento, Utah, and the Clippers. So that is a shame. We're talking about Zion and the streak, and as I mentioned, Lonzo Ball the last couple of games. Brandon Ingram has been playing well, but they're losing. So it doesn't mean a whole lot right now.
Yeah, I think I heard Mina Kimes say yesterday on Around the Horn, though, they have the third easiest strength of schedule remaining going down the stretch of the season. So in theory, it was possible, but the run that they just went on, I think, really put them at a disadvantage, which is a shame because in addition to playoff experience, we've talked about part of the reason the NBA, we think, suffered during the first half of the season was because we were expecting Zion. TV was expecting Zion.
Right.
And we didn't get that to start it. And we've seen life's been pretty good. Like, I don't know about you guys. Things have seemed more interesting since we've started to have some of these young-on-young matchups that have definitely tended to center around Zion Williamson. I mean, again,
he's the draw. There's just no way around it. He's the draw. Look, other people can be playing better. Like, Doncic maybe is playing a better, more efficient all-around game. Zion is the wow. He's just the wow, and he's the wow the NBA needed, obviously, with the lagging in the ratings because so many of the great stars at this point are playing later games.
Yeah, Milwaukee's playing the Lakers tomorrow night in L.A., 10:30 start on ESPN. I mean,
that's a Friday.
It is. So that helps a little bit, but, man, it's tough. Yeah. It is tough.
So we'll see what happens with that. We'll have much more on that maybe coming up with our next basketball guest. Doris Burke will be joining us in a little bit later. But up next, we asked, and you have responded, thoughts from Patriots fans about wrapping their heads around the idea that the guy may be heading out the door. We'll get to that after SportsCenter.
To his left off Porzingis. Favors has him on the switch now. Down to six to shoot. Straight away, three-pointer. Goes! With 1.109 remaining. 121 to 118.
Is that the call on ESPN Dallas 103.3? Last night, the Mavs beat the Pelicans 127-123 in overtime. Luka Doncic does the usual at this point, finished with 30 points, 17 boards, and 10 assists. It's his 22nd career triple-double, already passing Jason Kidd for the most in Mavs franchise history. Kristaps Porzingis, also big night, 34 points, 12 rebounds, 5 blocks. He becomes the first player with at least 30 points, 10 boards, and 5 blocks in consecutive games since Shaq did it back in 2000. Keeping it on the hardwood tonight, Steph Curry going to make his return against the Raptors. The two-time MVP hasn't played since October 30th and returns to a Warriors team with the worst record in the NBA. Oof, life comes at you fast. Steph's averaging 28.6 points per game against the Raptors in his career, his highest scoring average against any team. Golden State, the third toughest remaining strength of schedule down the stretch of the season. And in the NFL, the Panthers, and Matt Rhule have made their first big move, fat guy swap. They trade five-time Pro Bowler Trey Turner to the Los Angeles Chargers in exchange for Russell Okung, according to our own Adam Schefter. Okung's a two-time Pro Bowler, started 36 games for the Chargers over the last three seasons. This trade, however, can't be made official until 4 p.m. Eastern on March 18th, the start of the new league year.
Do you believe Tom Brady gives you a better chance to win a Super Bowl than does Jimmy Garoppolo?
I will certainly not pick Tom Brady over Jimmy Garoppolo for the long haul, but for just next season, yes, I think Tom Brady is a better option.
Now Cliff is picking up with Jared. Oh, Errol Smith.
Is anyone else still not sure what Richard Jefferson was talking about?
Well, I think now we found out he was just messing around. Yes. And you know what? He did it well because he had everybody wondering.
Guy's really good.
He's really good. I love how he took it. He got you.
Listen, those are pot shots taking an entire man. Again, I climbed a mountain. I don't know what you guys want from me. I'm in here giving you everything I got. Going out here and playing the second night of a back-to-back just like Zion, and Richard doesn't have any appreciation with that because I'm younger with him and have a little bit more hair than him.
Like Alvin Gentry, I think we need to stop worrying about this. You're 30. You'll be fine.
Can you give us an end date the Kilimanjaro excuse?
Stu Gott said I had 6 months.
2025. Just let's just hammer the over here, and then we'll be pleasantly surprised when it doesn't come back to haunt us. Speaking of coming back to haunt you, we had the deep dive in the conversation of what Tom Brady might do, and we asked for Patriots fans to phone in and say, how are you dealing with the idea that TB12 may be going away? Again, Jeff Darlington at this point said he'd be shocked if Brady chose to stay as opposed to leave. So we asked for voicemails from Patriots fans, and Patriots fans have responded.
I'm going to go cry in a corner. Tommy, leave. I don't know what I'll do. What's Julian Edelman going to do? Thanks.
Honestly, that's a great point, because I think as much as Patriots fans might be upset, I'm legit concerned about Julian Edelman if Tom leaves.
Listen, I'm not. The players go play.
No.
What are you going to do?
I mean Julian Edelman has made it his career to be Tommy's BFF.
Okay.
I mean, he's gone out of his way. He's put on his Twitter account, he started a shirt company, Stay Tom 2020. Yeah, yeah. I mean, Julian has been from the beginning.
You see Tom retweet it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty hate.
Somehow, I think.
Seems like there's collusion there between that, the FaceTime with Vrabel courtside when it was those two. Seems like Edelman's in on this.
Edelman is in on the entire thing.
He's on the take.
I think he'll be okay.
I'm legit worried about
Julian. I am legit not going to lie. There are Patriots fans asking, what are you going to do if your team goes 13-3 without Tom Brady? Well, we've seen them go 11-5.
They went 11-5. Just so people understand, that year was 2008. There are mitigating circumstances because that was the team the previous year that went 16-0.
Right.
So they were stacked. However, Matt Castle, who was the starting quarterback that year, hadn't started a game since high school. He went through his entire USC career and never started a damn game. So the first game he started since high school was an NFL game. And by the way, that year, that team was the only team in the current playoff format, which dates back to 1990, to win 11 games and not make the postseason.
Yeah, 11-5.
To that end, and I got asked this, I was on with our friends from Sioux Falls the other day, and I got asked this.
Sioux Falls, stand up.
In the building. I know the answer to this, but it still feels like based on that, there's some room for, like, the legacy of Tom Brady is impenetrable at this point,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like, no amount of that happening could possibly affect it, right?
Like, you mean if he leaves and they still have a double digit and make the playoffs?
If he leaves and for the next 2 years, because Tom says he wants to play till he's 45, right? So Tom plays till he's 45, so there could be two Patriot years while Tom is in the league without them, and they go 13-3 both years and make the playoffs. Does that do anything in your brain that makes you go, huh?
Here, them winning the division, I don't think will, because everybody will say it's an easy division.
I'm not even saying winning. I'm saying I'm saying like 12-13 wins.
So they had
seasons.
12 wins this year. So if they, what your thought process is, if Brady goes and they win 12 the next 2 years, will it change how you think?
I don't
Brady?
Think so. But if they make it to a Super Bowl without Tom. Or win a Super Bowl without Tom, then while his legacy, I think, sticks, there's going to be a whole lot of, okay, it was Bill more than Tom. Because that's what everybody, that's the question, right?
Correct.
I mean, peanut butter, jelly, ginger, Marianne, you young kids, look up Gilligan's Island. Bill Belichick, Tom Brady. I mean, right? That's what people are wondering.
Well, and I guess that's why the context of this argument is kind of different, right? Because it's not a normal circumstance where we're talking about someone's legacy. It's this is the part of the conversation we've never been able to really have, and we'd finally have. And you know what? Honestly, for me, it's kind of like the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. It's happening long after I think it's really representative of
correct.
Who both sides are.
Correct.
But it's all we've got, and we still run with it.
I completely agree with that part of it, because if we really want to know the answer to that question, this should have happened 10 years ago.
Exactly.
Not when he's 43, when he's 33. That would have been the best way to sort of delineate that. But that's not the world we live
right.
in right now.
Another tweet we got from a Pats fan. Everyone is putting this decision on Brady. Why is there no chatter that Belichick may be the one to move on from Tom Brady?
Look, that's 100% correct.
But the only way where it's not 100% correct is if Tom wants to say and Bill doesn't want him, who wins? Robert Kraft.
Well, look,
if Robert Kraft wants Tom to stay and Tom wants to stay, Bill is going to be overruled.
What about the timeline of this?
Yeah, listen, understand something. Tom only wants to go through this now because something didn't happen in August.
Right.
I mean, the Patriots decided, whether it was Bill or Robert Kraft or whomever, to not offer him a new contract.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
There was a training camp interview session where someone asked about his contract, and Tom basically said, "Don't you think I deserve a contract extension?"
I agree. But
so the Patriots are the ones that got
I agree, but I'm talking now if the rubber is going to meet the road and Tom is seriously thinking about leaving or wants to stay, Robert Kraft would make sure that he stays.
Well, so here's my only question with this is we don't know how long this is going to take with Tom Brady, right?
Yeah.
Right.
We said we're not sure what the timeline for this decision is. The Patriots tend to, like in most things, try and be early to market on whatever they're going to do, whether that's getting rid of an aging veteran who's done really well for them or anything along those lines. Do you not think there's some of, well, if Tom Brady's waiting a long time to make this decision, that Bill Belichick says, well, hey, we got to go out and field a football
correct,
team.
Right?
We'll go and sign somebody in the interim and make that decision for you.
I agree. And this one, this voicemail, brings us down the conspiracy theory rabbit hole.
Oh, boy.
Hey, Patriots fan, just wondering what the ripple effect is with all this Tom Brady free agency. I almost think that Belichick and Brady are doing this by design to cause other teams to pull the trigger earlier than they might pull the trigger on things like free agency and those types of decisions. Just kind of curious on your thoughts.
I'm trying to think of what decision that we're thinking that would make another team pull the trigger.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what we're going
there. Yeah, I'm not...
So he's saying, okay, I think I get it. Let me see. He's saying that Bill and Tom are orchestrating this together to see what other teams will do first before they come back together. Is that what we're saying here?
I would say maybe trying to force things. Like we just saw, for example, like the trade between the Chargers and the Panthers.
Right.
And we joked and we said the Chargers trade can almost be seen as them campaigning and saying, look, Tom, one of our deficiencies was offensive line. We're trying to help you right up the middle.
We know
you don't like pressure up the middle, so we got a guy who's going to help out with that. Maybe that's the idea of you get other teams to tip their hand early if you're the Patriots. That's deep down the rabbit hole.
That is deep.
Good job by
I don't
that
know
guy.
If I
he
buy it, but hey, you know, certainly throw it out there. I don't mind that at all.
Listen, we are definitely in uncharted waters. There's no question about that. So,
And real quick, for those that may not know, we're talking about the O-line. The Panthers and the Chargers
are
working on a trade on the O-line, sending Trey Turner, a five-time Pro Bowler guard from Carolina, to the Chargers. And Russell Okung, the tackle, would go to Carolina.
Is it a little interesting? I mean, we don't have to do a deep dive on a big guy swap, but you know, that one of Matt Rhule's first moves as the head coach of the Carolina Panthers would get rid of a relatively young
offensive lineman
for an older offensive
Turner lineman. Wants, he's got 2 years left on his deal and wants a new deal. Gotcha. So you might be going down a hole, a different hole there,
gotcha.
You know, of a guy that may sit out.
All right, so we'll see what happens. Again, keep those voicemails coming in because, honestly, Patriot Finch, I think you know how good you've had it. I mean, but are you prepared and how will you handle this if indeed he does leave? 860-506-5505. Coming up, a two-time MVP makes his return tonight, but what should our expectations actually be? We'll get to that after this.
All right, enjoy the game of golf even more with a custom set of PXG clubs. Your clubs may be opening up this weekend, huh, Trey? I'm excited about that. You can get your... Go to PXG.com to configure your clubs and buy for a personal recommendation at your convenience. Call 844-PLAY-PXG to speak to a PXG fitting expert. Or for the full PXG fitting experience, schedule an in-person appointment with a local PXG master fitter. Call or visit our website to book now. PXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do. Book It is next, and I say that only for the reason that my son Mike does this, runs this game, little game we play, but he just got done climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, if you haven't heard, and let's see if he screws it up and uses an excuse as to why he screwed it up.
Book that.
That's next.